There's a beautiful piece on the Netziv over here, and then there's a piece on Rav Hirsch. The piece on Rav Hirsch didn't print. It's like cut off all the bottom pages. They have a new...
By the way, Shabbos asked my daughter what she heard by the Kiddush, you know, with your wife.
Yeah.
She was telling me a whole shtickle from Rav Hirsch. That sounds very familiar.
You know what? My wife and I do talk to each other.
I don't know when, but, you know...
We have a kvius at least once a week. We say hello to each other. Okay, so we have the chet of Migdol Bavel. Now I'm going to throw in a lot of my own thoughts along the way. So Noah comes out of the teva, and there's going to be a form. There's going to be some form of governance to take place. Noah could declare himself king, and nobody would bat an eyelash. I mean, like. No, nobody. His sons aren't going to say no, and then after that, it's all 8 o'clock. You know, right? He didn't do that. Right? He didn't make it that it's revolving around him. The Torah clearly talks about this idea that the nations developed mishpacha yisom, which is interesting. The idea of mishpacha is not mentioned before Noah. There's no mention of mishpacha. In Parshas Bereishis, right? There's bonum and bonus. Each person had bonum and bonus, and they had, you know, etc. But you don't talk about the Abba Mishpacha. Now they came out with Mishpacha Sehem, etc. So the Russian was conveyed that there's going to be Mishpachas. There's going to be units. So that's an interesting point. Until now, the world was not divided up into units, and now it's divided up into units. We find that Migdol Bavel, what they did was that everybody was Sofa Achas and Zvor Machadim, right? And that we should come together. Not we should make this not Lamer Shem Henofas of Perei Kaldom Akol Oritz. So they are being misnaged to this idea. So the Netziv in the first page. Safarachas, Zegar Mlechet Echot. It caused the chates. What's the chates? Hanush Yaskimu Lashevis Kulam Bekibat Echot. The chate is that they decided to live together in one place. Zonagar Rotzan Hashem Shomer, Shirtsuba Oritz Urvuva. Hanush the Hisalech, Lorkul Roch, Bekibat Echot. The Bershom wanted them to spread out, and they didn't want to spread it out. So that was a chate. That's a fascinating, like, I don't think everybody else says this. I mean, I can't say I went through an exhaustive list of all the beforeshim, but that's interesting, like, no kanech. The fact that they wanted to stay together was not good. It wasn't the Ratzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
It's mach for people to live out of town.
Right.
All moving to Lakewood, yeah. Spread it out.
Okay. With the word machadim, the post is Sefo HaKas, the word machadim. Suppose the Lavir Kosov the war El Baremis. It doesn't say what that was. Al Pishon Kosov ki im shoy dvorim achadim. Bomishum ha dvorim hisar kadosh baruch hu ki mishil shohayu achadim. The ichud was the problem. Okay. Now that was what was going to be the issue. Dabar ze im kifil nir im ze shum oven. What's bad if we all agree about something? So Chazal say, right? And the Chazal Darsh had a fascinating idea that since Ephraim, even though they've done Averis, but since there's a unity in an Achdus, the person is not going to punish them. So unity is considered something which is positive. And here we're saying that unity is something which is negative. So it's so. I'll be komokam kan gurum laksha shiyotsim is at the double of the calls of Yishuv Kashayavur. This caused the problem. Okay.
Because they didn't fill up the wall?
So, yeah, but he's going to build up the thought. Okay. So, in Pasuk Dalet, Varesh Vashamai. So they're making this city, and they're going to make this tower. So what was the purpose of the Migdol? they weren't foolish enough to think that you're going to fit everybody inside one city. You're going to have the governing city, and all the cities around that will be subservient to it. And we're going to maintain control that nobody should move away, because we have this tower which allows us to see everything. So we're building this watchtower to watch over all of the society, that they're all going to follow the rules. So he suggests, what does this mean? Okay, so this is the goal, is to, then we're going to create positions of authority who can punish. What are we worried about? Okay. So that was something which they were concerned about. So he says like this. That was the Dvarim HaKadim. So the leaders recognize not everybody's going to agree to this. Human beings don't agree. They're not going to leave their thoughts, and they're going to have their own attitude. Okay, so therefore nobody can leave, and we're going to control what you think. And anybody who disagrees, any dissenter, is burnt in the Kibshon Aish. So come on, this is all part of this plan that we are going to create a ability to control everything, how you think. You don't think like us, no problem. You know, we just take care of you. So the Russian says, let's see what's going on over here. All right? And he says, Ve'emar Hashem, in Pasuk Vav, so Mashmos Am, other Am Echad, Hanu Kiminig Echad, means they, an Am is that they all follow this certain approach. This is just the beginning. But once this Migdal is done, the point of the Migdal is to give them full power to oversee and prevent anybody from deviating from this approach. Therefore, it's not going to work that which they're coming together. Okay, so this is what the Rosham sees as the fate. And he decides to destroy take away the Sof Echos and the Dvarim HaKadim, and now they're going to be, it's not going to happen.
So, what was the chait again, precisely?
The chait was. Okay, so he, after everything said and done, he never says clearly what the chait is. So, but there's a piece of Rav Hirsch which I think fits very well with what he's saying, and I think that would explain, it would expand what he's saying and the point of the chait. Imagine a society which the leaders have decided this is how everybody's supposed to think, and they're not allowing for anybody to think otherwise, and they're going to build the society in such a way that it's impossible to escape their control. So the Gemara says that tzaddikim, by tzaddikim, chibra is good for them, because when tzaddikim collaborate, good things happen. And it's type loyalim. Pizer for the tzaddikim is ra'alehem ra'alehem, and they collaborate, they're not together, so they're not mechazik each other, and they don't bring out the good things they can bring out for the world. Rishoyim, pizer for them is type lohem, type loyalim. And the Rishoyim, when they come together, it's ra'alehem ra'alehem, because together they can really do a lot of bad things. So we have to have the people who are doing this have to be above any reproach, and they have to be that these are people which are constantly striving to do the right thing, and then they're now imposing the right thing upon everybody. But who guarantees that? I mean, if you want to look, this was the experiment called communism. Right, we're gonna get everybody to look at the world a certain way. There's a certain worldview you have to conform to it. It's a good worldview, and we're going to impose it upon you. And if you don't think like that, there's mind police. Right, we will find you and we will get rid of you. Right, because this is good. But the result wasn't very good, because that wasn't that. The Rishonim says, I don't want that. I want you to spread out. I want you to be separate. So why do you want that? So it first says in the piece before, when the Torah describes the flow of the psukim. One second. Ari needs that. Sorry, good. Okay. So the Lord comes out of the he brings the karbonos. Ve'yamar Hashem li loisiv the kalal oidus adam abavur adam ki etzalev adam rami the rab loisiv the hakis as earth kolchay kasher asisi. Okay, my earth there b'kaitz are loyish boys. That all these different types of Zera, Kotzer, Kor, Choyim, Kites, Cherif, Yoim, Laila, Lishbois. So, Kipshutai, beforehand, that's the way it was. And during the Mabul, that stopped. The Mishnah says, I stopped it for the punishment, and now I'm not going to let that happen again. I probably won't have that, because that's not true. Beforehand, the world was a totally different type of climate. They would plant. The Medrash says they would plant. That one planting would produce enough for 40 years. And the Medrash goes to all these different things. How the world was different then. So then, if so, Olkei Me'or Oritz has to be a response to the Rishonim says, "I'm not. Is there the Kalas Adam Abavur Adam?" And Olkei Me'or Oritz is a response to that. So how is Olkei Me'or Oritz a response to this concern? He says, you have to stay, he says, that, you know, when people lived 800, 900 years old, and you got somebody who's bad on top, you know, you're in for a long ride. The world was set up that people are going to live extremely long. Says that's not going to happen anymore. We're going to create a world which the changes of climate, etc., are going to affect the lifespan of man. See, when you get a guy who's bad on top, 20, 30 years, he's gone. Number one. Number two, he says, furthermore, or it doesn't mean one after the other. It means at different places. There's going to be places where there's kites, and places where there's karev, there's places where there's karev, and places where there's karev. And what's going to happen? People, as the nations live there, they're going to develop differently. And when they develop differently, you'll never have this one group being able to put Ra over the whole world, because there's always going to be a misnagid to it. There's always going to be another force against it. Whereas if there's only one climate and there's one type of way people develop, everybody's going to be the same. The person can get power and can just maintain it. The society will become the state. Great. Will become powerful and last forever. versus another. There's going to be nation states. In other words, it's a fascinating point. The, as it comes out, there's mishpachas and there's idea of these are going to be the umos. Why did Rashi make that? There was no umos beforehand. There was no mishpachas beforehand. He says this was the response to the concern of what had happened before the Mabul. So the person understands the psukim. So the idea that there are nation states was a positive introduction the Russians putting in the world in order to prevent Ra from entrenching itself the way it did beforehand. And that was done through the seasons. It was done through the Bereshit talks about the fact that Bereshit introduces now you can eat meat indicates that the bodies had changed and now meat was necessary for their constitution. It was all indicative that there was a change over here which was taking place. And that's the flow of the psukim. So the Bereshit tells them, "I want you to spread out everywhere." Right, so the Siva is saying that was the Russian. That's what he wanted. When you said, "No, we don't want that," that's the aver already. That's exactly what happened. What the Russian was scared is going to happen. Like, so it was a fascinating thing to me to I never thought. We discussed this once, but I never thought about why did the Russia make nations? He didn't have to make nations in the world. We always say, there's nations. The Rebbe doesn't point out there was no nations before him, but he points out that the concept of Mishpacha was introduced over here. But it hit me that this is the introduction of the concept of different groups. So, I mean, I once heard years and years ago, I don't remember from, I saw it somewhere, I heard it from somebody, the Bereshit made the different nations, because this way, as the Jews wander throughout the world, and it goes bad in place X, they can escape to place Y. That's a bitty Evid thought process. That, assuming we're going to go with the Gaulists, amongst the nations. Nations are not going to like us. And there's going to be a refuge somewhere else. But why the Russian made nations, the Chachil, was just for that purpose? That's like an interesting thought process. It's true. Right, that. The Russian thing, it's a much more basic. The Russian put a form of checks and balances in the society of the world. So now we live in a society now which their push is to remove all borders.
Universalism.
Right, universalism. You know, the progressive ideas that take away the borders. Like, border police is anathema. How are you talking? You not let somebody in? Well, because this is our nation. That they find that to be a bad, dirty word. Right? You know, the people are patriotic is like they're, you know, it's chauvinism as far as they're concerned. But what the next step is, this one that hit me recently, it says, free speech is being challenged.
Right.
Why? Free speech was introduced by the authorities to maintain their power over everybody else. That's what they say. Maintain the white male privilege. You know, so therefore, you know, you can get to have whatever he wants. So let's now introduce a concept of that when somebody doesn't think like us, let's go publicly shame them. Because I'll say that's Kibshon Eish. That's the modern version of Kibshon Eish. Because I'll say it's better to go into a Kibshon Eish than to shame somebody publicly. So yes, they're not throwing them into the Kibshon Eish. We're progressive, you know. So instead, we go and wipe the guy's name through the mud to the point that he has no life. No, we're nice. That's okay as long because why? Because he's not thinking like us. So the idea that there can be a dissenting opinion is being crushed. If you don't think like us, you're a bad person. Right. It's a very fascinating thought process. This was what communism was trying to accomplish, and this is another form of communism. Right? And communism sounds so beautiful. It's unity. It's echad. It's right. And the Bereshit says, "No, I don't want that." Because yes, if I can guarantee the guy on top is a tzaddik, it sounds beautiful. But you can't guarantee that. I can guarantee you that it's not that because power corrupts.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting though is you do, even when you, you know, ardent nationalism also leads to war and, you know,
yes,
the world wars.
It does. And you know, and the individual level, that's very painful. But in the global sense, that's what keeps the world safe, because there's a form of checks and balances. So what, no nation is ever going to get so strong that they're going to become the only way to look at something. Al pi Kabbalah, you know, we spoke about this once from Dessler. You know, Dessler says it in his Baal Musar way. I mean, you know, but Dessler also gnashed by the Baal Kabbalah, etc. You know, I'm sure he did more than gnashing, but he gave us little pieces. He gave us a little pieces of, you know, of it here and there. You know, that the Bereshit put in each one of the nations a different nitzitz of kedusha. So what's the pshat? Like, they go to Spain, and the Jews are in Spain for the next 20 years, and all of a sudden they're thrown out. Like, there's no Jews for that. Whatever the nitzitzes of kedusha which were there that Spain had to offer have been absorbed. There's no reason for the Jews to stay there anymore. That's the Kabbalistic way of looking at it. I mean, you know, yes, it went through a painful process, but the halakdavar who, why the Bereshit? Okay, beside the earnest shaboy is one thing, right? But beside the fact that the whole society changed, like what happened? Why the Bereshit? What was the Bereshit's goal in that? So Dessler says it in a different nusach. He says that there are different kachos and nefesh, and the Jews, as we go into a nation, we absorb some of the kachos and nefesh of that nation, and that can be used for Avodas Hashem. Mm. And eventually, that's all absorbed. There's nothing more to do with that. So, you know, I mean, the most obvious example of that is, you know, the Jews who went to Germany, you know, developed I don't know what they were like when they went there, you know, compared to the German tribes, etc. But the all of those elements of punctuality and fastidiousness and all different things, the Jews absorbed that and used that for Avodas Hashem. So at some point in time, that's done. So there's now the Jews move on to the next nation. How does the process happen? Everybody says it's time to move. I'm not going anywhere. So we kick you out. You know. So the idea that the nations, as they develop, each one develops certain strengths and certain milas. And that's something which is important that we should collect that. That's the point that he's saying. But going back to leaving the Jews out for a second, that's exactly what happened to the world. The different nations develop certain strengths. And that creates this tension, which, yes, on a person, on an individual level, that can be very, very painful. Many people will be killed. Besides the function of the world, the person was using that as a vehicle to create that there's not one way to look at it which is ever going to be able to impose itself. I decide that the passion of the French is wonderful, and everybody has to be passionate like me. No, they don't. And if they would, the world is being. You're making the world flat. Right. It loses its flavor.
Constricted it.
So I don't know. I think if like you want to understand what the Rosh is doing in the world, Parsha Noach is the Parsha, because this is the Parsha where the Rosh is setting up the governance of the world. And you see how he set it up. He Bedafka set it up in a way that. There's a fascinating piece from the Maharal. Maharal talks about it on an individual level. He says that why are Jews argumentative?
We are.
What?
Disagreed.
Right, exactly. So he says. See, he says that in the Mishnah. The Mishnah, Rebbe Chaim Arkano, the Mishnah in Brachos says that he used to make it say a tefillah when he would go into Beis Medrash. That he shouldn't be nichshel with our halacha, and his friends will, enjoy that. And they should be nichshol. He'll enjoy that. It's like, why should you enjoy when someone else makes a mistake? He says, obviously, the point is because you disagreed with him. So if he made a mistake, it means you're right. But you shouldn't gloat. Because if you gloat, right, Russian punishes that. So that's what he said. But why am I assuming that if he says A, I say B? He says, that's how the Russian made us. He says, what's the result? And that's the more in time is, the more it says that Rabbi Yochanan, when Reish Lakish died, he was very upset. So they sent Rabbi Lozer to make him feel better. Because he needed a charusa. So when Rabbi Yochanan would say his pshat, Rabbi Lozer would bring 13 rides that he's right. So Rabbi Yochanan said back, Bar Lakish, you're like Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish, I would say something, Reish Lakish would give me 13 reasons why I'm wrong. They'd ask you 13 kashas. And I would answer all the kashas. And there would be a rebuy of Torah. I don't need Urias. I know that I'm right. That's not, you know, I want somebody to challenge me.
You want the truth to come out.
Exactly. So the morale says, the Russia made us argumentative for a very good reason. If you say A and I say yes, we're not clarifying them. If you say A and I say B, and I say, well, I have a right, then I'm right. And you answer the question. As you're answering, usually you're correcting and modifying. And you're honing in on the point. And then I challenge you again. And you challenge me. And we clarify more and more. Each time as we do that, we get more and more clear exactly what we're supposed to be. So it's no longer this broad, general statement. It's much more clear that the limits of when you apply it, etc. So because of the sikhsuch, you come to something greater. So sikhsuch, when you're dealing with people which have the humility to then accept, the result is phenomenal. The Bresha didn't make the world of the nature of the way he says. The Bresha made the nature of us is that we will disagree. Badafka. Why do you make that? Because that's what forces us to get a better vision of what's right. It's a fascinating thought. Not in a learning situation, on the personal interaction level. I told you the word from Ray Tauber. I went to Tani Peres Chaslan, so I wasn't up to driving. So the Chaslan was in Muncie.
And there's no good, in the woods.
No, he had it in a hall. He had it in a hall, but there's a hall over there near by New Square. So, like, there's no. I want to take transportation. There's nowhere to go. You take the train. You get off at Metro Park. It's 41 miles from there to Muncie. So I have to hire a taxi for 41 miles. Kitzer, turned out there was a great Einfall. The Chasda party from Chicago. He's from Chicago. They're flying into Newark. They're renting a bus from Newark to go up to the Chasda. I said, great. I'll take the train till Newark. Get up at the airport stop, I'll take the bus with them up to. So that's what I did. So I get on the bus, and there's like 40 people on the bus. Like these people flew in, etc. And me, they all know each other, and I was totally ignored, which is fine. With I like to talk to people. I schmooze with the bus driver the whole way. It's a multi-tourist bus driver. It's like, it's a room guy. You know, I said, why not? Cop Ryan, So, I mean, he also was being ignored because, that wasn't a dafka. They were talking to each other about different things. They knew each other, so the conversation just flowed to their things. Like, I have no chances to it. So I schmooze with the bus driver the whole way. It's an hour and a half drive. The bus driver and I was schmoozed. So he tells me at one point in the conversation that he was the personal driver for Rabbi Tauber for a period of time. I said, oh, great. I got to hear some stories about Rabbi Tauber. Right? So, earlier in the conversation, he had mentioned to me that he has some shalom bias issues. He and his wife, the shalom bias is not so good.
You got that on the bus driver?
Yeah, I'm telling you. I got everything.
Mile marker 93.
So, So I said, so like, you know, I asked him then, like, you know, like, you know, it's like, you know, so how does it work, you know, how do you deal with it? He said, well, he takes the long distance trips for the Muncie tours, for the most part. So he goes away for a few days, he comes back, his wife missed him. So the first day or two is good, and by the time it's wearing down, it's time to leave again. That's what he says to me. I said, like, oh my gosh. Anyway, I wasn't going to try and give him advice on that at that point in time. I said, did you ever ask Ruth Tauber about the Shalom Bias question? She says, yes, I did. I said, what did he tell you? The Ritabra wrote a book on Shalom Bias. Right. So I was a bunch of curious, like, what he said. I don't remember the guy's name. Let's call him Yankel. So he says to me, Yankel, have you ever seen how they polish diamonds? She says, no. He says, I'll tell you how they do it. He says, a raw diamond. You ever seen raw diamonds?
TV, I have.
Yeah, they look like nothing, right? Moments look like nothing. A person who's an expert puts it in a vise, and they bring down a machine which has tremendous pressure, and because it's put there, it cracks at the spot he wants it to crack. Right? You know, the pressure is put in a certain place, and he knows how to do it. It breaks apart. Now you're ready to start polishing. Says there's a problem. There's nothing as hard as a diamond.
Right.
So what do you polish a diamond with? You polish a diamond with a diamond. Which diamond? The other half, the two halves. Because they're polar opposites. So they will tend to rub against each other. She says, and after a while, when you do that, you get two polished diamonds. Says, the Rosh Hashanah took out a Mechaba, and he ripped them apart. He rubs them against each other, you get polished diamonds. Says, Sikhsuk in relationships is not a bidi evan, it's a chatilo. That's what makes you grow. Dealing with the fact that somebody sees something different from me. And how do I learn to deal with that? How do I learn to respect another person's position? How do I learn to understand there's other ways of looking at something? How do I deal with something that, you know, that it's not always going to be the way I want it? If it always be the way I want it, I become a bagai. Where am I going to learn humility? Where am I going to learn to... And how am I going to learn to respect my children's approach and how they deal with things? Where did I learn that from? How do I learn to respect my neighbors? So the training ground of marriage is that place. You learn to live with somebody who's different than you and has different way of seeing something, has different opinions. You learn to respect that. You learn to see that they have valid points, and you learn to see that, you know, that it's not so easy, and sometimes you have to give in, and learn sometimes, you know, and sometimes people frustrate you, you have to learn to ignore. You know, you learn so many things from the challenge, which you never would get otherwise. And the result is you're a better person. You grow from that. So Sikhsuk is not treif. It's not b'di'evit. The Rosh Hashanah made the world like that. So in a personal relationship, the Rosh Hashanah made the world like that. In the world of education, the Rosh Hashanah made the world like that. In the world of a society, of a global society, the Rosh Hashanah made the world like that. My way of looking at it is the right way. So why does everybody in France see it differently? Well, because they're all stupid, right? That's what Americans say, right? You know, like, you know, the reason why we say that is because we live 5,000 miles away. If you live next door, it's harder to say that because you know them. It's easy to say somebody who's a nameless face that he's stupid. These guys are nuts. I know that. You know, I see them every single day because the border's good, right? And they see things differently. Right? But let's say I don't want that. So I make a global society where everybody has to think my way. That's such a damaging approach. Because I'm not growing from that. I don't grow from that. I suppress everything which is otherwise because I can't not deal with the fact that somebody sees something different than me. The answer is he's stupid and he's deplorable and he's ridiculous. And, you know, so half of America are deplorables. Why? Because they don't think like me. And it can't be they have a valid point. Because only my way is... The guy of a Shabbat is Kefirlach. And then the best part about it is they say, well, and you know, and these people are Balagaiva, they think they have a right to think not like me, because they're Balagaiva. Right? So called the person of a Mumma. But what's happening is to the point that you can't hear another way of looking at something. That's damaging to your neshama, it's damaging to the version of the plan for the world. Because then there's no checks and balances. So we want to have this global society, not because we're big tzaddikim, Because this is where I get to impose my wonderful thoughts upon everybody else. That's the chet. You can make it sound beautiful. It's unity and it's wonderful, etc. But that, the problem is, it's rooted in a flaw that you're not willing to human beings make mistakes. And we need a checks and balances. And we need another viewpoint. And the fascinating thing about our society, America, it was rooted for so many years in the idea of that there's two parties. And there's two ways of looking at something. And it drives you crazy. It was the best thing which ever happened to America. And now the result is, it got to the point where neither side could hear the other side. And that's already, we're getting to this. So, I don't know. That's just my political theory, commentary from all sides.
WTOP.
WTOP. I haven't listened to WTOP in a lot of years, Baruch Hashem.
Could it be, Rabbi, that both sides got too big by themselves? It's got too big.
What's happening now? You know, I once mentioned to you a piece from Yehuda Leib early on. Yehuda Leib early on worked with Sarah Schneer together in the Beis Yaakov. He put out the Derech Hashem that we had printed. Remember that was Yehuda Leib early on. He was able to put it together and put the notes on the side, etc. Tremendous Talmud Chacham. After she was Nifta, he took over he was the main leader of the Beis Yaakov movement after Sarah Schneer was Nifta. So they put together essays that he wrote, and they published it. So there's an essay from 1926, and it's a fascinating essay about radio was really becoming like a very nafutz, etc. at that time. And he said that when I live in my little corner, so I only know about my issues, my successes, my pain, my failures, etc. I live in a small town. I know about yours also. And part of the greatness of man is to be able to empathize and with your life, what's happening in your life, as much as it's happening. I have to be able to empathize with you. So we live in this town of 50 people. I have enough capacity in my being to empathize with everybody's story. So this family is having a problem with poverty. I feel bad for them. These people have illness. I can do with that. I can deal with that. These people, Baruch Hashem, are being successful. I can be happy for them. I have that capacity in my. He says, we're living in a society now which I know about everybody thing that's happening in the whole world, but I don't have the emotional capacity to relate to what's happening to all these people. So I no longer interface with what's happening to people on a human level. So, the modern version of it, right? I pick up the newspaper in the morning. I'm eating my breakfast and enjoying my Danish, reading about, 12,000 people dying in Southeast Asia from a tsunami. Where's the humanity there? If it was my neighbor, I wouldn't do that. I couldn't continue my Danish because I know that person. They're real to me. He says, if mankind will not increase their capacity to emote, as they're increasing their capacity to become aware, human beings will become cruel, and eventually they will turn on each other and kill each other. This is what he writes in 1926. It's like whoa, And you see 13 years later, I don't look at other human beings as human beings. They're less than me. Right? That became like... So our society doesn't... we don't see people as people. We interface with so many ideas and other things, so much not on a real level, that it's some... Like I said, the guy next door I cannot dismiss easily. But there's so many of them and they're so far away from me. There's those crazy progressives who live in California. I can say that line because I don't live in California. I don't live in San Francisco. I live in San Francisco, I would see that they're human beings with many things like me, with some interesting opinions. Euphemistic word, interesting, right? But as long as they're not real to me, I can say that line very comfortably. And vice versa. But what our society has done lately is that we live in such a bubble that I never interface with those people. I avoid interfacing with those people. I avoid the idea of having somebody challenge my thought process. And therefore, they become more and more distant, not a reality of a human being. So I don't have to interface with them and respect what they're saying. And you have people, there's no dialogues anymore. There's monologues. There's people shouting at each other, not hearing each other. That's what I see is happening. You know, I think this is a process of human beings. We've expanded our awareness of what's happening around us. We haven't expanded our capacity as human beings to deal with all that information. So, therefore, you know, there's tens of thousands of people right now which are living a mess in California with the fires. You know, power outages, etc. Right? So, somebody writes an article about, they brought it upon themselves because of all the progressive legislation which controls the forestation is overgrowing, and because the power companies were not allowed to do X, Y, and Z to protect certain things because that was, so the result is that they have to cut off the power. That's true. Their point is valid. But if the first half of the article is these people are in tremendous pain and I'm emoting with their pain and I feel their pain, then I have a right to write the second half. And, you know, maybe if I don't have the first half, I shouldn't be writing the second half. Because all I'm doing is saying, you stupid idiots, ha ha, and you. While people are going through tremendous difficulty in their lives. So that's not a human interaction anymore. They're not human beings anymore to me. And that's a very dangerous place, because then the result is you're willing to condemn them, and you're willing to legislate negative things for them without taking the consequences, because they're not human. That's what I see is happening. The humanity element is missing. Because what's the other option? To emote with, you know, everything's going on. So, you know, I had a chaver who lived in Yerushalayim, and he could not sleep at night. He was a very extremely sensitive, emotional person. He'd walk through the streets of the day and see people who don't have food, and it would be pain as much. He couldn't sleep at night from the pain. You know, I see it, and I go to sleep at night. If they're my best friends or their neighbors or somebody I really know well, who would talk and eat at me. But it's, you know, it's somebody out there, so it's not real. And, you know, so now I can pick up the paper and hear about, you know, the people dying and over there and all the different places in Africa where things are going bad, and South America and North America and da, 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 you know, like, I don't have the capacity to deal with that level of emotion. So I have no emotion. So I can eat my Danish. I mean, it's if you think about it, it's like, I told you the story with the woman in Eretz Yisrael with the chayal, a simple pasher yidden in Yerushalayim. Okay, not so simple, not so pasher. Woman X is writing a story that she was in Woman Y's kitchen, and they're listening to the chadashot, and there's an announcement that, you know, that a chayal was killed in Lebanon. So Woman Y, like, drops her knife, and she just, like, grabs the counter to steady herself. She's, like, so overwhelmed by emotion. And Woman X says to her, like, you know, do you know who that person is? Like, why are you acting so strongly? He says, no, it's not related to me. So why are you acting so strongly? He says, he's a Jewish boy. He's one of our sons. So she said, so woman X says to woman Y, says, you react to this every single time? And she's, and woman Y says back to her, you don't react like that? That's the end of the story. And woman X was like hit by the story to the point that she published the story. She asked, like, what do you mean you don't react like this? What's the, how can you not react like this? Well, we don't react like that. There's some boy out there in Nebo who got killed. You know, some family out there is grieving. There's some young man whose life was cut short. Like, what do you mean? There's a young man who's a fan of the family in Eretz Israel. The family is grieving. The brothers, the sisters, the parents, the grandparents, the aunts, the uncles. His potential for life was taken away because he stood there to help make sure the Jews should be saved. And you're not in pain? We don't look at ourselves. Rav Chaim Shalev used to be like that type, he is extremely emotional. He would emote with these things. It's not easy to live like that. People are doctors. People work in oncologists. They develop a sense of not letting it get to them because they can't function otherwise. But to some extent, that makes them inhuman. It's a very dangerous walk. So that's what I think is I remember when I saw that essay from Yuri Borleon. I was like, whoa, it was prescient.
So what's your solution for today?
That's a Moshesh Moshesh. I don't care. So I told you that so many people ask why they don't say the tefillah for the tzahal in yeshiva and Shabbos.
I think we spent 40 minutes on that anyway.
Yeah. The Rosh gave us, Chazal gave us tefillah. So you're right, I can't walk around the whole day. But there's three times a day, or even once a day, where I'm davening in Dafkin Lashon Rabim. For all of the Pandu clients. People who need refuah, and people who need pranasa, people who need das, clients who need Yeshua. And at least during those moments, I need to push it, try and be aware of how much difficulty which is out there. Re'evon Yeno, Re'evon Re'evenu, the people who need Shidduchim, the people which want to have children, the people which have Siksuchim between them and their husbands and wives, people who have Siksuchim between them and their siblings, right? People have Siksuchim between them and their boss, you know, between neighbors. Re'evon Yeno, there's tremendous amount of Inui out there, right? Refuah. And then when we daven, you know, and then the next, I mean, the Nefesh Chaim says we have to feel the brush of pain. The Shekhinah is not happy that we're in Golus. He can't bring the Gula because, you know, but the brush is in pain also. He wants us, the Chaim wants to write, you have to emote with the brush of pain. I said, like, whoa, you know, like, you know. So at least at those moments, a person would, like, be able to stop and think for a little bit. I've been trying lately not to talk about davening too much. I'll tell you, you know, when I was in Tells, I think I mentioned this to you, like, every shmuzin she was either about davening or learning. And, like, whenever the shmuz started to be, that it ended up being about davening or learning. And I developed almost an aversion to saying shmuzin about that. Because I heard so many shmuzin about davening and learning. Like, is there nothing else we can talk about? Right. You know, there's no other problems that we have to deal with? But kavod and davening, like I've mentioned, I've spoken this with the Bachar all the time, kavod and davening does not mean knowing what the words mean. You have to have kavod in your davening, you have to know what the words mean. Like, that's, people think kavod means knowing what the words mean. That's like, you know, baseline tefillah. Kavanah means that you're directing your words to something. You have what you have. You're direct. It's also a kivun of a direction that you're doing something with these, with this tefillah. You're trying to express something. If the tefillah is not an expression of who you are, it's lacking in kavanah. So you know, my issue with people like that's not my issue. The issue is there's no time to let a person stop and think about what he wants to express. Like, and people like might talk about like what is it with davening? Like, which like, well, yeah, that's not what. Well, so what else is davening? Davening 3 times a day that a human being is able to stand in front of his creator and say, "Hashem, I need help. My neighbor needs help. Kaiso needs help. You, the world is not the way you want it to be. Please, let's do something about it." Like, if that's our halacha, before we start davening, our davening is going to be different. And yes, you're not going. It's not a question of fast or slow. It's a question of time. Say the word slowly. Say the word fastly. Have more awareness of what the words mean. Less. That's not my. I feel like we're not communicating. That's not the issue. The issue isn't that, you know, the issue of davening is we need, davening should be an expression of what's going on inside of me. Chazal gave me the words to say, to express it. But if I don't emote with the davening, the more it says that, you know, it's a voidish of a life. Excuse me, most people say voidish of a moyach or voidish of a pa. It's not a voidish of a life. But Chazal also said that Avodah Shalev is tefillah. So that's what I think the answer is. You know, once a day a person can stop and think. You know, I mean, like, Reva Nenu. I mean, yeah, there's 18, 19 year old young men and women who are putting their lives on the line to keep their brothers and sisters safe. That's inui. There's a tsar in Klai Yisrael. Russia, please see that and rivori veinu. Ugalenu meheir on the man shemachol. So at least at that moment, we're evoking our humanity for much bigger segments than just ourselves or our little slice. I'm seeing Klai Yisrael. I'm looking at the Russia. I'm not happy with the world. That's what the Rav Chaim Lesher means. He was able to evoke humanity for the whole society by looking at it from Kadosh Baruch Hu's eyes. The version of the Chazal said has pain. When every single human being has pain, he has pain. Whatever that means, the version has pain. Like, there's lots of billions of people out there who have a lot of pain. So I it's hard for me to relate to the pain of, you know, the 1.5 billion Chinese people. Their name was a faceless to me. But to Kadosh Baruch Hu, they're not nameless and faceless, and he's in pain about it. So, Russian, please help. Okay, I moved in. It's more real at that moment. It took me 10 seconds to do that, but it's more real. You know. Anyway.